Hey guys, last week we learned about bees! Today, we'll take that knowledge and grow it into a unique fantasy world. I'm Lauren Harris, and I'm a fantasy author. With me today are plant medicine PhD and crop safety scientist Dr. Sarah Tabor and world-building aficionado Adrian Erickson.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Before we get started today, we have a brief disclaimer about this podcast. Remember, ideas are cheap, and you can't put them back in the bag once you've let them out. So you listeners are encouraged to use these ideas and world seeds to write your own story. We only ask that if you do, you toss us a shout out in the acknowledgments or author's note. So, bees.
Bees.
Something that Sarah said last time actually gave me an idea for kind of magic or culture system, which I think counts as a world.
Yeah.
I was thinking of a way of magic where it is passed down in almost like a matriarchal way, where you have a queen of some type who is the main possessor or arbiter of that magic. And that queen can give magic to other people, but she needs a drone type to do that at the same time as her. And they can together impart the magic, but she has her own sort of hive gathered around her.
A little drone type.
Okay.
you're taking your role, are you?
I just feel that. I don't know.
And if what we've got is kind of a bee culture-based society / the magic that goes along with it, mm-hmm. then we could look at between the different cultures of, you know, multiple kingdoms or multiple continents or races, whatever.
Bees.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We take bee types. So, you know, they process differently. They have different cultures, got the ones that are a little more loner. And so we kind of then racially set apart our world's races by bee categories, races of bees, and the way that they prioritize things and function. Because you've got the aggressive ones that have to deal with the world's honey badgers. I mean,
okay.
Do you want to hear a quick story that should have gotten in the first segment, but this may help?
Yes.
Okay. So back in the bee lab. So one of the younger beekeepers who just like, he kept bees and then the lab job was his side hustle because that's agriculture. So we would get calls from the public sometime. People be like, I think there's Africanized bees in my house. You know, like just building a hive in the walls or something. Like they would get calls like that sometimes. And like he personally, being a beekeeper, would go get them. And so the thing that a lot of like, it's not public knowledge, I guess, but like there are different subtypes within Europe of honeybees because just different like people in different countries bred them for different things. There's a big split between like the German and Italian ones, like or Carniolan. And so there's just size differences. There's kind of coloration differences and there's personality differences. And so this lady calls and she goes, I've got Africanized bees in my house. Can you come help? And he was like, well, how do you know they're Africanized? Because we're bee experts and we have to look at them under a microscope with a ruler, like, and do some statistics. How do you know? He's had this phone call a million times before. So he's just like, wait for it. And she's like, they're black.
Oh,
the thing is, like, dark colored honeybees are from Germany.
God.
Like, he would get these phone calls and he would just razz them on the phone because it's so funny. He's like such a country boy and he like had no time for that shit. And he was like, how do you know they're African? he would just razz them on the phone and just be like, you realize they don't work like people, right? They got their own thing going on. That's not how this works. Like, you don't know that. Just look. We can come take a look, but settle down.
On that note, when you say race, you don't mean human race. You meant magic race.
Magic race. And
I don't know what that is.
Sorry. And I don't know.
Fantasy.
I don't know what the... Are we even talking humans? Like, it depends on how people want to go. Like, because, you know, you've got lots of different races in fantasy worlds. Do you want to go with a predefined like one that's human, elf, et cetera?
How
I mean, any
look.
Species... This has always been my problem with fantasy, is that in fantasy, they use the term races for essentially different species. And that's not how we use race. I mean, we're all with multiple races, just like they're all bees with multiple types of bee. But in fantasy, we use race to be humans, elves, dwarves. I'm sorry, those are different species, not races. So I was thinking, like, whatever, you know, sort of species you're working with in your world, whether it be you know, essentially human, essentially elf, essentially fairy, whatever you want to go with, even if you give it like a different name, like a lot of people do, have the racial separations be defined by characteristics that are based, that parallel with the different B types.
You know, like the more aggressive magic types would be like bigger people.
I mean, Bumbles are not aggressive.
Yeah, they're super chill and like they're fuzzy. And just if you piss, like you have to work really hard to piss them off. And if you do, you will regret it. But like they're not out to get you.
You've got the ones that are definitely more attacky and defensive and aggressive. You've got these corpse bees. You've got your honeybees, which are sort of collectors, farmers. And then, you know, are they smaller? You know, why? What's their environment like? And from there, you plot an environment. So why do these things occur in people?
What I would caution on that for, you know, world builders and fantasy authors who have not really done it is to be very cautious of not perpetuating a destructive stereotype.
Right. But it also gives you the ability to completely avoid, like, because we so often go into the racial effects that we're accustomed to.
Yeah.
And so then all we look at are things like skin color, hair color, freckles, eye shapes, and with something totally alien like a bee, all of a sudden you could have the differentiations between races be skin patterning. Like some of them have faint striping? You know, you know, is it ear shape thing? Is it a number of fingers thing? Is it a stinger thing? Like,
think outside the box.
Avoid using the same things that we use for humans completely and see what you can do with bees. Because there's also personality differences there with bees. And then that could flow to the magic.
Yeah. What I was thinking was like different magical types.
I would combine the two was just
combining the two would be
they'd
really
be the
fun.
Same. Magic would be dictated by basically genetics and race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when like
you can also use some real world biology to kind of inform this. For example, like I think when we're kind of thinking of how things work in a fantasy world, we kind of correlate just like larger characters with more aggression. Those things go together, but Africanized bees are actually smaller than the European ones. Because of the tropical lifestyle, like to get through, like there's not just heavier predator pressure. There's more disease. There's more parasites. And so part of how they deal with that is having a quicker life cycle. They're faster to develop, and to make that work, they have to be just a little bit physically smaller. So there's kind of this whole kind of all-encompassing different lifestyle that you're having to deal with. And the aggression is just one factor of that. Like just having a more assertive personality is just one part of that, but there's a lot of other ways they have to be different. And like, that's, I don't know, in ways that kind of defy.
So they may, may have kind of live fast, die young lifestyle, and the culture itself might just be a little bit more like attack first, ask questions later, because that's how you survive.
Yeah. And those things that can kind of really make, you know, make a convincing story in some unexpected ways, drawing on real life stuff that just doesn't really conform to like usual storytelling conventions.
Because that was my thought with the bumblebees. I mean, they're like these big, delightfully happy farmers. You know, I love them. And you would, you know, with those characteristics that are physical and therefore you're ending up with races, I would want to see the magic, just like you said, parallel with that. What is their farmer gatherer magic going to be like that's a little slower and gentler and clover based versus, you know, your sort of aggressive attack or your corpse eaters? Like, what does that look like?
You had said patterning. What if, because of this idea of I want there to be like this almost process that the queen goes through where she gives someone magic and it's essentially creating a worker bee or creating a drone for her colony. What if there is a physical patterning that happens as you use the magic or when you gain the magic?
That would be interesting.
And because the queen is going to go out and create people with magic, the queen will go to a bunch of different hives and or like different types of magic building colonies. And you might end up with some really interesting magical crosses as well, where people have different like magical patterns.
Well, then we want to look into, you know, do we want to go like with all of this purely linear B? Or just the idea of the very matriarchal, the queen as leader, rather than the literal interpretation of the queen has to propagate them all. Like, Do you want to sort of bring it to a middle ground where it's just, you know, she is very much the leader, the commander?
I think the woman as the leader commander is interesting, and that's one good way to go. I think the, like, drawing it even to an even closer parallel where she has to create magic in someone else is less done and would be really interesting. That would limit and really closely direct some of your storytelling, and like the how of how people get magic would be that, like, there's only a certain type of mage triarch who can do this, and then the only time she can pass it on is when she's ready to die.
Interesting.
Like, she has to either die or completely give up her magic in order to pass this ability onto someone else. And there may be able to be a thing where, like, if you kill her, there's some way to take her magic, kind of like a Highlander situation.
Oh, no.
There'd be like a way to take that role.
Okay.
And there would be interesting circumstances, like she goes out on her little, her walkabout flight to make new magic-y people, and something happens and she's dying, and some farm girl who doesn't want magic finds her, and she's like, too bad, you're queen now. Like, that would be a really interesting story or way to go with that. Or, like, even a dude comes up and she's like, well, this hasn't been done before, but I'm dying, so. And you end up with the dude queen.
I love it.
Like an Ezri Dax situation.
Or you could really be, it would really be interesting to explore the non-gender binary as well. Like non-binary characters, and like, how does magic work with a non-binary character? And it being...
in a heterological world.
less about the gender itself and more about like the title. You're like the mother, the magic mother, but you could be non-binary. You could be fluid. You could be a man, like a cis man. You could be a cis woman.
When you can do some fun stuff with like, okay, so this happens. This is the purpose of the situation. And how do other people feel about it? How do they respond to it? How does that play into, like, I don't know, political situations?
Yeah.
So what about the way they are set up as a society? We'll call them colonies. So,
well, that would depend on the type. I mean, your corpse bee people are going to have a very different society than your bumblebee people. Your bumblebee people are going to be very different.
Or like your European honeybees, where you have to pour sugar on them to get them to clean themselves.
So you have the queen, right? And then you have usually what you call her court, which is pretty much anyone who is around her at that point, and they like clean and tend to her. So as an analog, you have the magical matriarch who has the ability to grant magic to whoever. And then you have sort of her little acolytes or whoever's like immediately around her. How would they tend to her? Would it be like a handmaiden thing where you have a bunch of people who are just like helping her dress and feeding her grapes and things like that?
Or sycophants.
I mean, it again depends very much on how closely you want to keep your parallels versus how just inspiring the thing you want to keep your parallels. I mean, I would vary it by in internal culture, like every one of them would be different. And each queen would expect different things from the people around her based on her personality. Like, how demanding does she want to be? How demanding can she get away with being?
Yeah. Where did she grow up? Like, what kind of, did she grow up in a completely different colony culture?
Because again, we're not exactly talking about bees. We are talking about, I'm presuming people. You're probably doing some sort of people-based story. I mean, you could be doing bees, but, you know, what was her family? What was her culture? What was her upbringing? Nature versus nurture. What's her personality? How does she want to handle it? You know, does that tie into the magic to some extent? Does she, is the magic sustained by a certain amount of worship from her followers?
There could be an element of the worker bee types have to give pieces of their magic to her because she can't go out and get magic on her own.
So does she then somehow imbue them with the ability to collect it for her? And if you piss her off and she kicks you out of the nest, You lose your ability to farm magic.
Mm-hmm.
She can take it back.
Yeah, once she gives it to you, could she... How much of that pheromone thing do you want to have in there? How much do you want her to be able to go, okay, attack? And everybody has to attack. Like they yeah. don't even get a choice. Or they're very strongly compelled. How much of that do you want to put in there? With the little newbies.
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 Sorry. We're going to just keep punning.
YA bees are like adorable. Like the like newly hatched bees, like they're adults, but they're like, they just became adults. You know, like they just pupated and like hatched other people and stuff. They're mm-hmm. adorable. They can't fly. They can't sting. They just run around like taking care of everything inside the nest and keeping it clean and stuff. And they're just innocent. And I love them.
Aww. So, I mean, you could even use that as a thing where they don't have the ability yet to quite handle. They can't really use their magic that well yet. They're still learning how to do it. So they're given all these other little menial tasks like go keep shit clean, scrub this, do this, study.
And they're just so enthusiastic about it because they're bees. They're just like, yeah, clean it. It's cute. I'm kind of obsessed with how, like, so in a beehive, the queen is, like, not really in charge at all. Like, it's not a political authority position. They're just like, mother, give us eggs. Like, she's a little bit kind of lost in the role, you know? No individual worker is in charge, obviously, but there's kind of, dare I say it, a hive mind at work. And the workers sometimes will kind of, like, point her towards another area of the nest. And they're like, this needs brood. Go over there. And she's like, oh, look, empty cells. Better lay eggs here. Doop, doop. And they're like, yeah. Thank you.
I mean, she's the way that people are able to get magic. So she's constantly giving magic. She's exhausted.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could use that.
That's why she's got to eat like all the time.
What if, so the worker bees can go out, they can gather the pollen / magic, render it into magic themselves. So they could just like fuck off and be mages. And some of them do. But there is a very strong like bond, possibly even like a magical or semi-telepathic bond between the matriarch that created your ability to use magic and you.
The workers kind of enforce the rules on each other, which I think is really interesting. There's a lot you can do with human behavior there.
Yeah. And there's an idea that like everybody brings back this magic and then gives it up to the queen, who is the one who decides then who gets to have that power to spellcast.
Okay. I like that.
And that could be how just like one colony works.
When you do get to where you're building your story, writing in your world, you know, are you going to be dealing with sort of picking one and detailing in? Or are you doing a whole multi-kingdom, you know, multi-magic, like the epic variances fantasy. And epic fantasy versus, you know, a hero's journey in a single kingdom? Depends on how much you'll...
A hero's journey.
Look at all of these things.
What would the vulture bee community be like?
Very sanitary. I mean, there's no rotting meat in their precinct.
I want to call them the necromancers. Where they're kind of...
I mean, we eat meat. They eat meat. Like, they're just... They'd be more of the hunter on the hunter-gatherer. You know, maybe rather... Yeah, they're the more tribal moving, because if you think about culturally, you know, agricultural communities settle, and hunting communities, they move. They have a transitionary settlement. They, you know, migrate.
Well, like in nature, vulture bees generally tend, I think, to be in rainforest environments. So there's a pretty stable climate and everything year round. I don't know how this plays into things, but like there's a steady supply of carcasses usually where they hang out. I mean, otherwise it'd be hard. And plus, like if there's not, they are preserving the corpses into like a charcuterie situation. So it could be a way to get around seasonal supplies and stay put.
Charcuterie bees.
I love it.
I still like them as necromancers, guys.
It's a beautiful thing.
Ooh, what if they're not really necromancers? They don't raise the dead, but they're able to take their power from the dead. Like they somehow mulch or use corpses.
Turn them into like, a jam. No.
Yes, they cut them into strips and then they hang. I was saying cannibals, but no, they use the corpses to power their magic. Something about the process of decomposition and all of the energy that goes into that with different organisms and bacteria, like they're able to somehow generate magic off of that. So if the culture itself is part of it is like they have a very hunter based culture and they have to bring a tithe or like a portion of the meat to the magic side to sacrifice basically. And they bring that meat and then that meat has to rot and decompose because that's how that form of magic takes its power.
Okay. I like
that. Or generates its power.
What is birth? I don't know if this is more or less creepy, but hear me out. Okay. So
hearing, listening, excited.
So they're just basically exactly like normal bees, except instead of pollen as their protein source, they just use dead things. So what, because they're little bees, they have to go in through the holes, you know, eyes, mouth, whatever. They just kind of go around there. They pick up, they chew off some meat and then they spit on it to start the enzyme process. They eat it, then they bring it back to the hive, and just like any other bee with any other honey, they puke it back up, and that's how they're turning it into honey. And then they store it in little pots and save it for the babies when it's time to feed them. So I don't know if this helps or if this makes things worse, but...
Well, the creation of honey, I'm thinking like honey is the...
concept of magic.
Magic is the analog to honey. I mean, I'm not sure vomit magic is really what anyone wants to go for. I mean, if it's out there and it's your wheelhouse, do it. Just I won't read it.
Like- well, so there the differentiation then is basically the farmer versus hunter gatherer. So the source being the planting, the pollinization, sort of the herbalist versus the concept of it having killed something, having eaten something, having so agrarian magic versus sort of an aggressive hunting magic.
And then there might be something like a war magic.
I get like a really fastidious, like I have to clean up things vibe from the vulture bees. Is that weird? They're just like,
no, because if you think about it, the only way that you can allow things to rot and not get sick yourself is to be very, very practiced and fastidious about it.
Yeah.
If you are fermenting things, you have to do it in pots and like bury it and put special bacteria in it and all kinds of things like that to get things to do that.
Just kind of type A bees for bees.
Type A bees. I mean, that almost makes it creepier if you think about it. You've got all these people where it's like, yes, we have lots of rotting things in this house. Please take off your shoes.
Oh, that's cute.
Would you like a wet napkin? Like that culture would be almost like a whole bunch of freaking undertakers.
Yeah.
I love the neatness. Does it need to be rotting? I mean, for a bee, obviously they're carrion because they're having to use previously dead meat because a bee isn't going to kill a horse unless the horse has an allergy. But a person can kill its own things. So is it the death and the needing to, or is it the carrion aspect? When we talk about, you know, how we want to handle it magic wise.
Well, I would say let's separate those and let's have one culture be it's the actual killing and the taking of life that does it. And then another culture, it be the carrion aspect.
Yeah.
And the decomposition.
So it's not necessarily even that it has to be one or the other. So they're like racial magic is this carrion bee magic, but then you've got different cultural uses for it depending on their subset.
Mm-hmm. And then another culture would be like the hunters or warriors where they're actually taking magic or gaining magic from hunting and killing the creature where it's like part like life force almost.
Yeah.
And I mean, those could work together quite well too. So if you have like a queen from one of the war hunter cultures and a drone from the corpse bee culture and they work together to give a third party magic, that person might have the ability both to take magic from, let's say, shooting a deer. And then by allowing a portion of that deer to rot.
Gotcha.
So that person would have two different patterns of magic.
Yeah.
I'm doing some Google work that may help or may make this worse.
Oh, tell us Google things.
All right, two things. So the vulture bees, so like most bees have pollen baskets, like they have fuzzy spots where the pollen kind of packs on.
Pollen pockets.
Yeah. Vulture bees don't have them because they don't get pollen. They pick up meat. So they're smooth and hairless. And
woo, shaved bees.
Yes. And then also, so they did some experiments where they just like left some dead animals laying around in Panama. And they're like, let's see how long it takes for the vulture bees to show up. And it did not take long. It did not rot. Yeah. It wasn't there long enough.
They're on it.
They are over it. Yeah.
I find it very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, all information is one of the, it can be,
everything helps,
can be used and chewed on and vomited back out into something gloriously sweet.
In foraging experiments performed in Panama, the animal flesh had not noticeably putrefied before being discovered by the bees. Oh, and they chased away flies that were trying to lay eggs. So, like, yeah, there's, you got to fight for what you want, you know?
If people are to want to take this world on or this magic system on, you can do either way. You can cleave very closely to the specific nature of the bees, in which case it would just be you eat meat, you gain health, you get magic, which seems pretty great to me. Or you can do something
so
and just say,
magical.
You would be. You're a little carnivore. We are getting close to time. Any other last little ideas here? Or
there's just so much with bees. I'm sorry.
So much with bees. You know, I have never been stung by a bee. No, been bitten by horse flies.
I remember the first time I got stung by a bee. It was in my backyard when I lived in Oklahoma when I was 6 years old.
Wow, that really drilled into your brain forever.
It was my first experience with stepping on a bee, and it hurts like a bitch.
Yeah.
And then her lifelong fear of needles was born.
That must have been it.
I mean, I'm sure you'd had needles before that and already hated them.
Oh, I know exactly where that goes.
Found it.
No, I can tell you.
You just
exactly
found a bug
the...
with a needle on its butt, and you were like, "Fuck this thing."
I am viscerally aware of where the fear of needles comes from. And yes, it was earlier than that.
Yeah. Adrian fell off a swing set at what, 4?
Mm-hmm.
That'll do you.
I ripped my leg open. Like, the scar is still about 6 inches long. So you can imagine what it would have been like on a 4-year-old's body. I remember thinking, I thought I was dying, and I got rushed to the emergency room. I got something like 40 stitches.
Boo.
So yeah. Not a fan of needles. Never gotten over it.
Goth question I have to ask. When you say, I thought I was going to die, as a 4-year-old, what was that like? Were you like, I know what death is and it's coming for me? Was it just like general panic? Like, I need to know.
It was just complete panic. And I don't think it had registered too much to me until, I know my parents were trying really hard to keep it together. They didn't think I was dying, but they were freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a child, when the adults start freaking out, something is horribly wrong. I don't entirely understand, but maybe I'm never coming home. Maybe this is all like, what's happening? Oh my God, it's in my leg. Like everything just, you don't even have like a concept really in the adult words that we use today of, will I lose my leg or will I die? There's just that something
bad
horribly is wrong. Everything's changing. I don't know if I'm going to come back. I don't know if my legs, like just this panic.
Wow. That's fascinating. So sorry. Like, yeah. We've all had like childhood experiences. I'm just kind of like, I don't know. Like I'm obsessed with fear of mortality. So I'm like, I need to know more.
Would it have been better if the needle died after it stung you?
With a bee?
I mean, don't think I would have had any concept of that.
It should go into a
sharp's
box. It does
die. It never gets used again.
Yeah, it goes into a sharp's container. So, yeah, I mean, you can be comforted-ish.
I don't think that really helps. Just going to throw
so
that out
forth,
there.
Friends, and create. Remember, if you write something in this world, let us know at storyslowpodcast.gmail or at gmail.com. We'd love to give you a virtual high five and a shout out. Go be productive! They're totally gay bees.
Oh, there's gay everything. That's like there's the wild thing everything. About agriculture. Like everybody's had a gay livestock animal that they really wish wasn't, because they're like, you have one job. It's to do the sex with the opposite sex, but they don't want to do it. And then it's like, well, how do you think it's not real in people? I don't understand. Like you've I don't know. Like, there's this attitude that, like, you just learned it from somebody on TV and that's why you do it. And I'm like, explain to me your goat then. What's that all about?
He watches too much TV.